Chuck McKinney joins the show to talk about the Sixers and how the Celtics limited Joel Embiid. And then we get into a big conversation about Gordon Hayward's contract and some flimsy trade rumors out there. After the podcast was over, we recorded basically for 20 more minutes about Gordon Hayward's contract and what he might do. That's a bonus podcast that you can only get on RedsArmy.com. So after you listen to this on Monday morning, go to RedsArmy.com for the 20-plus minute conversation that Chuck and I had about Gordon Hayward, his contract, and his future. So stick around for that. But first, here's the Monday Locked On Celtics podcast. Rainy days back with the vengeance. Back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. This the truth like 34. Yeah. It's like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. Crowd goes crazy, most in-depth coverage on the daily, mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings, focus like Danny at the deadline, global with it, got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line, play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day, trying to stay in tune with the C's, it's the best way. Melly. Happy Monday, everybody, and welcome back to the show. Got Chuck McKinney from RedsArmy.com with me. I'm John Corrales of Fast Live. Here to talk a little bit about the Boston Celtics' 116-95 win over the Philadelphia 76ers, which was a lot easier, Chuck, than I thought it was going to go, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, I was prepared to be really pissed off and angry tonight, right? But
which is your default. Jaylen Brown, like, you're always preparing for that, right?
He's just not going to let me be angry about this team. So, and I agree with you. I just, watching that game, it just I kept anticipating a Philly sort of a stronger Philly run, never really came. And, Philly is just, they have issues, right? And they remind me a little bit of last year's Celtics, where it's like, you know, I think you might be in denial if you think they're going to figure it out. You know, of course I want to be quick to write them off, but it's like, I don't know, man, it's always something with them. So, they couldn't make the push, and the Celtics just, you know, I mean, they were giving us highlight dunks. It was freaking,
it was insane.
Tatum, Wanamaker was taunting. It was just like,
hey, look, party. When you're Brad Wanamaker and you dunk, not even really on Joel Embiid, but at a passing by Joel Embiid, like, that's good enough. He's never dunked in the NBA, so you should get to stare down Joel Embiid in that situation without getting a tech.
Absolutely. I didn't even think it was excessive either.
No.
I was watching with my girlfriend, and she's like, in the moment, she's like, why is he going so slow? And I think we all had that reaction.
Yes.
What are you doing? Are you lulling him in? She's looking at me for an answer, and I'm like, I don't freaking know. But it all turned out great.
So she basically is like all of us podcast listeners when you're on the show. Turning to you over an answer that you don't know.
Absolutely.
Shout out. But I got a shout out, Wanamaker. 15 points against Philly. On his daughter's birthday. And remember, when he's from Philly, when the Celtics went to Philly and Kemba missed that game as well, he didn't play. And now he had DNP in Philly at his hometown. Like,
that's right.
Like, yeah. So, I mean, that was – so shout out to Brad Wanamaker. Above all else, that's a big performance, and especially on his daughter's birthday. But, okay, so that game started with Jason Tatum going like nuts in the first quarter. That first quarter for Tatum was all-star. When you saw the way he was playing, like, I was looking at the way he was scoring, even in the second quarter, confident attacking. He had 11 points in the first quarter. He had the dunk came in the dunk on Horford came in the first quarter. Yeah. He did all of that in like 7 minutes. It was watching him play that first quarter, I thought, this is the all-star that we're watching. The way he was playing was just like, damn, this is the type of player that we've been talking about all this time. And, you start to look at all of the things that we've talked about throughout the course of the season with Jason Tatum. Oh, he can't finish his layups. Well, now he's shooting like 60% on drives. And all of the other things that he was working on, I feel like over the course of the season, he's like, all right, let me try this. All right, now I got to react this way. And it's been a slow progression of putting it together. And now we're starting to see Jason Tatum take the best of all of those things that he was trying and incorporate them into a more mature game.
Yeah, man. And it really felt like he said, I got this. You know what I mean? It's a role we've seen Kemba do a little bit this year in certain spots, where it's almost like like you said, it's like big game. You know, we're down, Kemba. We want to start strong. I got this. And he just looked so comfortable, and it just looked like he was doing what he wanted. And I was like, oh my God, this is what it's going to be like for the next six, 7 years with this kid.
Yeah.
Right. Like the confidence and the dominance, and this, we have no doubt, right? And because, you know, obviously there have been ups and downs, like you went through. He's had weaknesses and stuff. But it really was like, oh, boy, I was giddy. You know, it was just so good to watch.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what? He had two fouls in the first 224 of the game. Brad kept him in, and that's when he started to do his damage. So he didn't get passive after getting into early foul trouble. He turned it up. And which is not something you usually see. And when I saw him start to come down after his second foul, I thought, all right, let me see if this kid just starts jacking from three. And not at all. He was aggressive the whole time, and really didn't even get a foul the rest of the game. So it was a very nice adjustment. And then, of course, obviously, you've got Jaylen Brown, who had the big game. He kind of picked it up after Tatum. Like, Tatum had the big first quarter, but Jaylen had like a 7-point first quarter, and then Jaylen just kept it going with 32 points on 13 of 23 shooting. And here's the most impressive thing, which is weird to say, 1 of 10 from 3. So he scored 32 points without hitting a ton of threes. Like, he did it all on attacking and ones, getting into his spots, hitting pull-up jumpers in open spots when, you know, you're not going to challenge Embiid and try to get him going by letting him block a bunch of shots. Like, he just pulled up from the middle of the lane and those shots were falling.
Yeah, man. He's really, like, to think of how far he's come since he came in the league, right? Obviously, some of his major weaknesses were shooting. Right. And clearly he's worked hard to improve that. And, you know, his ability to kind of dribble drive or create off the dribble was never really a strong suit of his either. I think we'd always poke fun at his handles. But watching him last night, and we've seen the progression this year, but that move that he put on Tybal,
yes,
was just unbelievable. But a big part of the, you know, it was flashy with the dribble. But what really sets that up is, you know, he gets into the paint and he's really become almost automatic with that like 15-foot fadeaway or that 14-foot fadeaway. So Tybal had to kind of respect that. And after all that dribbling, Brown threw him like one little slight head fake. Tybal had to bite on that. And then, you know, Brown just swooped in. It was just a masterful sort of display. But it's not, you know, it's more than just one move. It's the progression. Right. And I love what, you know, I'm not here to tout mid-range games, but it's similar to Hayward. You know, I want you to get to the rim, but I don't want you to get there and just have the ball be knocked out of your hands or be going into two guys. There's nothing wrong with pulling up and dropping a sweet little fadeaway up. It's become automatic for him. And it's so, man, it's so pretty to watch. Like, I'm even going back and forth with Tatum and Brown. I'm like, oh my God, this is unbelievable. Right. You're like, it's heavenly. You know, I don't want to be gushing about these guys, but holy shit.
But it's true. It's true.
Right?
And so Marcus Smart, after the game, was asked about how much Jaylen has added to his game. And he said, it's, you know, it's incredible. And this is the line that I was really struck by. He said, from his rookie year when we were telling him to slow down in transition to now when we tell him, go do your thing. Like, that's where all of the things that we've been saying over the years about Jaylen Brown, like this dude just gets the ball and flies down the court and just launches himself into people, and it just wasn't working. And now finally he's shown how to master change of speed, how to master pace. And that has always been the most important thing. It's not about being faster than everybody. It's about running at a certain speed and then having another gear to kick it into or to slow it down to, so you can get a defender off balance. And more than anything, and probably coincidentally with his ability to, you know, improve his ball handling, that change of pace, that change of speed, that change of direction, that's the thing you're talking about with Tybal, where he just, you got to respect it, and then he just kind of slows down, and then pow, boom, he got, you know, as soon as he's got you leaning forward, he's by you. And if this stuff can continue, now we're looking at the gushing of, but, you know, to have these guys do it against Philly, you know, shorthanded, whatever Philly's going through, like, clearly a very bad performance from Philly. You can credit some of it to the Celtics defense, but you can also credit some of it to, like, Philly just playing like shit. But it doesn't matter. The Celtics needed a win against Philly, and those two guys just showed off every possible good skill that we've been waiting for them to show off, and just tantalizing for the future.
Yeah, and they could have gone in and pressed a bit, right? You know Walker's going to be out, and you want that win, but it never felt like that. I mean, he was 1-for-10 from three, but it just had a flow to it all. So they could have pressed, and you know Hayward, he kind of fell off a bit last night. He had a rough shooting night, and he's been really solid. But seriously, they just they didn't press. They did what they needed to do to get this win, which was spectacular play. And it's not just one area. It's they're both rebounding. The defense is obviously spectacular, right? Just watching Tatum anticipate passing lanes and getting his hands on balls. You know, and Brown's always been a step ahead there. It's just all of this stuff coming together, you know? Man, I need a towel.
Let's take a break then. Let's just take a break, cool off a little bit, talk about how the Celtics defended Joel Embiid next here on the Locked On Celtics podcast.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
It's as hard as it is to like pull back on the gushing. It's very nice to see that performance. But another good aspect of this win over Philly was what they did to Joel Embiid. And I think when I was talking a little bit about some of it was what the Celtics did and some of it was what the Sixers did, I think a lot of that is centered around Joel Embiid, who in this game he made only one basket. He scored 11 points, 5 rebounds, 1 assist, 4 turnovers, and it was a minus 25 on the night. He hit his first basket like 10 seconds into the game. They got the tip. Al Horford found him with deep position on Daniel Tice. He got an easy layup, and I thought, oh boy, here we go. This is going to be a long night. And then nothing. In fact, the next time down, he took a 3. And I wrote down, why is Embiid pulling from three right away? Like, he got the ball and early in the shot clock pulled a 3. And you're like, well, that doesn't make any sense. You've got a guy you destroy in the post that you've already scored on in the paint. What are you doing? So I guess part of it is thank you, Joel Embiid, for playing this way. But part of it is also the Celtics, once Embiid did try to get aggressive and did try to get the ball in the post, they threw double teams at him. They threw different looks at him. They prevented the ball from getting in there in the first place with a lot of pressure on the ball. They did a good job overall on Embiid.
Yeah, right. So that's really what the Celtics, they did a lot of different things, and it was most effective. And maybe that contributed to Embiid being out of rhythm. But like you were saying about it, you know, his his willingness to shoot threes early, either in games or in shot clock situations. Until he figures out that he's so talented, he's such a force down low. You know, why can't he commit to establishing that part of the game, of his game early in games, and force teams to react to him? Because he's going to get open shots for his teammates, and then he'll get defenses spinning, and then he can find spots where he's going to get open looks on the perimeter. But I don't know if this just goes to Philly in general being, you know, a combination of not the right pieces. But when you see him doing that, you're like, yes, I'll take it.
Yeah.
I mean, I know he can occasionally make those, but you're going to shoot him early in the shot clock and you're not going to be pounding us or getting us in foul trouble. You know, it's, you know, in a night where, you know, we don't have Cantor, not that he's any sort of lockdown presence on Embiid, but he's still a big guy that we would use against him. And he just didn't seem interested in trying to do that.
No.
You know, and that's just the knock on him. And I'm, you know, there's a story in the Philadelphia Inquirer today that I'm reading, and they're asking these same sorts of questions where he looked disinterested. He seemed to be preoccupied with his hand at moments or his finger. You know, he had a bandage.
Yep.
Like, it just didn't seem like he was completely engaged. So, you know, some of it's because of what the Celtics did, but he didn't exactly respond with a lot of toughness.
No, right. Not at all. That's been the knock on him. And I don't want to sound like the TNT crew, but he's one of the few guys in the league where you do want to post him up because he is such a mismatch. There's, I agree with, you know, Rick Carlisle when he's talking about, the post up isn't the most efficient thing that you can do. I mean, you do it sometimes when you have to, and you do it sometimes when the matchup it makes sense. But with Embiid, you do it often, and you do it with the mismatch. Again, Daniel Theis was, when we talk about the center position and needing to upgrade it, one line you always throw out there is, and Embiid always destroys Daniel Theis. And that's the fear. That's why these stupid Andre Drummond rumors persist that we're going to talk about later. So I don't get what's happening, although I do think I get what's happening, in that I think that part of what's happening in Philly is it's become untenable. Like, they've tried for a few years, and this combination of Simmons and Embiid, it's not working. And I think that's what it's coming to in Philly. Like, I think everybody's starting to realize, like, this fit, just, we try to force it a little bit, try to put some shooters around there. We tried different combinations, and it's just not working. And I think Embiid in particular lets things get to him. Like, he can be, he's the first guy to say rent free. Like, but
yeah,
I think that also is an indicator, like, he's projecting a little bit, that it's very easy when things are going well, he can talk a lot of trash, but when they're not, he does not respond well. He's not a guy that pulls back into things when he seems out of it. And then you throw in the foul trouble that he got into in the second quarter. Then you throw in obviously the injury. Like, that was just a recipe for disaster. You could see it 2 minutes into the game.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking at the box too quickly, right? And I mean, a guy like Tobias Harris is only, you know, he took two 3-pointers, 4 of 12. Like, they just don't have the right spacing, and it's a broken record. And I don't know what they're going to do to fix it.
Yeah,
they're kind of linked to just about every shooter out there. But you know, I don't want to take away from the Celtics, right? A lot of what we did, and you got to give Brad credit because we're, you know, I think he had the right approach, and not that it's any sort of like had a, this awakening, but you got to throw different things. Like when you don't have an when you're at an obvious mismatch, you got to do different things. And the Celtics players responded. We saw some good stretches from Ogilvy. There was that sequence towards the end of the game where Grant Williams was just busting his ass,
yeah,
getting offensive rebounds.
Yeah.
And like you talked about with Wanamaker. So there were guys stepping up, doing what they had to do. So, you know, there's a lot of dysfunction there. You got to give the Celtics and the approach that they took in this game and how the role players responded a lot of credit too.
Yeah, absolutely. So Celtics beat Philadelphia. They avoid getting swept in the season series there. So, it was nice for the confidence, but, you know, whatever. If they do get to tied with the Celtics, then they'll hold a tiebreaker. The question now is, do they find themselves tied with the Celtics at some point, or is this going to fall completely out of control for them? Philly is currently sixth. The Celtics are currently third. They're tied with Miami, but they hold the tiebreaker, and they are three games ahead of Philadelphia. Meanwhile, Philly, they play Miami and Milwaukee next. So if they don't get their shit together, that could go wrong in a hurry, and I don't know that they're going to fall out of the sixth seed, but, you know, there's a strong possibility that they have written themselves or dug themselves too big a hole, and we'll see what happens if they can get back to home court advantage or what coming come playoff time. All right.
Yeah, like you said, the bottom is probably that sixth seed, right? But still, that's a catastrophic failure for them.
Sure.
And for me, the question is, with taking a quick look at the seeding, is, are the Raptors ever going to lose again? Like, what the hell? I mean, I feel like the Celtics, they should be the second seed in the East, but Toronto just, you know, losing bodies left and right and still is just on this ridiculous run. So hopefully they come back down a bit. I still think the Celtics can be the second best team in the Eastern Conference.
Probably. I mean, 11 wins in a row, I mean, that's crazy.
When
you look at it's Milwaukee and Toronto right now that are hot, and then everyone else is just kind of sort of doing okay. Celtics and Miami, 6-4 in their last 10. The Pacers are 7-3 in their last 10. Even the Sixers are 6-4 in their last 10, but they've been scuffling along. But we'll see how this all shakes out. All right, up next, trade deadline stuff, another stupid Andre Drummond rumor, and Gordon Hayward talking a little bit about his contract. Coming up next here on the Lockdown Celtics podcast. Follow us on our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Lockdown Celtics on Instagram. As you might have just heard, there are a lot of great advertisers working with Locked On to reach sports fans, but you may not know that Locked On Celtics is a great way for your local business to reach passionate Celtics fans just like you. Unlike any other podcast, Locked On gives your company the unique ability to reach local podcast listeners, not just any podcast listener. Locked On podcast listeners, if your company wants to connect with Celtics fans in a predominantly male audience that is well-educated with disposable income, let's put your company right here on this Locked On podcast. Local fans love to support local businesses. So text the word advertising to 33777 or visit lockedonpodcasts.com/advertising and let us know who you are. We'll get our team to help you achieve your goals with Locked On advertising success. Once again, text the word advertising to 33777 or visit lockedonpodcasts.com/advertising. We are looking forward to hearing from you. The Boston Celtics are looking forward to the end of all of these rumors, I'm sure. But let's start with Gordon Hayward, because a lot of this stuff hinges on him. Gordon Hayward telling a couple of outlets, he talked to Brian Robb, talked to Steve Volpett of the Herald, basically saying that he hasn't really considered what he's going to do with his trade. His player option on his contract. He has a $34 million player option for next season. I personally, Chuck, I would be surprised, and I've said so on this podcast before, but I'm happy to reiterate. I would be surprised if he opts out of this deal to do anything besides re-sign with the Celtics long-term.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. He doesn't seem like he's going to be chasing. He just doesn't seem unhappy enough here to do that. Everything, you know, with the teams that have cap space right this year are not teams he wants to go play for. You'd think he, at this point in his career, he wants to be on the team that gives him the best chance to win a championship. None of those teams with salary cap space are even remotely close. So you're right. It kind of makes sense. Now, he could just, you know, let the contract take its course and then become a free agent after next season,
yep,
right? And then take his chances with, you know, there are bigger names in that free agent class, right? Is that
that's the Giannis year. That's I forget who else right. is in there, but that's big names. There are
that's
a lot of big
names,
names
right? Yeah, so, yeah, yeah. You know, the guy like Hayward could just kind of – he's going to be on the periphery waiting to see – where all these other players fall. So I don't know. I mean, when I watch him play, like we've seen over the last, you know, 2 weeks or whatever, when he's that good, and I think that he can sustain that sort of play, you know, I want him here. I want him here. I think, and part of that is seeing that Tice can be a decent enough presence at center, and just thinking that the Celtics can maybe find another center at some point to kind of plug into this rotation. I want, you know, I like the team with Hayward here. So I think for me, I'm hopeful that even if it's at the end of next year, right, they could re-sign him to that long, you know, to a longer term, shorter cash. Scenario, right? I mean, would that still be an option if he played, you know, his contract out?
Sure.
Something that's 4 years, $20 million, or is that too low for a player of Hayward's stature?
I mean, I don't know what the market would be at that point, but
yeah.
They have his bird rights. They can certainly,
right.
They can certainly do that. So if he opts in and just plays it out, then he becomes a free agent in 2 years or at the end of next season. So I don't know. What he's not going to do is opt out. He's just I would be shocked. And I know I might have said something similar with Al Horford, but at least I misunderstood the impact of what last season was going to take on him.
Right.
So he saw the room and he said, nope, I need to get out of here. Cause he read the room and he said, this isn't going to be how this goes for me. I can't be with this mix. And I don't know if he thought Kyrie was sticking around or not, but whatever, you know, it worked out. Having Kemba here and everything, that's whatever. That's in the past. It's done. Although I do wonder if he regrets it. So Hayward, like you said, the teams that have cap space are all bad teams. He's not going to want to go to a bad team. I just don't think he wants that. So either stick around, opt in and see that play out, or opt out with the agreement in place with the Celtics to say, we're going to do 4 years at whatever money, and we're going to make sure that, you know, 2-3 years from now, you're paid 20-something million dollars when, you know, you're not sure if that's going to be the case. And I don't know. That's him to kind of bet on himself. Like, what's he's in his early 30s now. So I just...
Who? Hayward?
Hayward.
Well, I thought he was 20. Is he 29?
No, he's 30, I want to say. Isn't he 30?
I have to do a quick.
Oh, he's almost 30. He turns 30 in March. Okay.
Oh, okay. So yeah. So, NBA years. That's significant.
Right. So he's going to be 30 by the end of the season. So yeah. You know, he's going to be 30. He turns 31 next season, which is still kind of in his prime, but like the end of his prime. Like now we're looking at 32, 33, 34 year old Hayward, and what's that guy going to get? So I think the Celtics have incentive to get him on a shorter money, longer term, because I think he's going to be an important piece. And in whatever you think the number is, whatever they think the number is, I don't know. But to get him on multiple years at shorter money to reduce their tax bill when they're going to give Jason Tatum the max, like next season, Jaylen Brown kicks in. But then after that, Tatum is going to be in 21-22. You're going to have Kemba at 36. You're going to have Jason Tatum on the first year of his max deal. You're going to have Jaylen Brown at 25. Like, you're going to have to figure something out. And maybe that's just too much money to spend on four guys. And that might be what fuels the Celtics to say, hey, maybe we do want to move them. Maybe we're going to look at a long-term deal and say, this is a guy that we could possibly move at the trade deadline. As much as he's important to us, we can fill that somehow and turn that into something else, which is where the concept of other players now has come in. And we heard the report from Chris Sheridan, who I honestly put no stock in this, but the Celtics are reportedly, via Chris Sheridan, who now writes for Forbes, one of the suitors strongly interested in Andre Drummond, and he suggests Gordon Hayward and Enes Kanter for Andre Drummond and Derrick Rose.
Yeah, I mean, again, I'll say it for the 100th time. I have no interest in moving Hayward for Drummond.
None.
No, zero. And even acknowledging, had we even gotten whooped by Embiid last night, if he churned out a 42-18 performance, I still don't think that type of move benefits this roster. There's just, I don't like Drummond's fit here. He's too expensive. I'd rather Ainge, pursue another big. It just doesn't make sense for me. So, like we talked about, it just seems like the reporter is just using kind of the Celtics, obvious, the discussions around the Celtics, lack of a kind of another big to really just fill out his story. There's no sorts of, sources are telling me the Celtics are engaging with, the Pistons. So it's a rather thin report, and I don't put much stock into it. I would like to hear a little more traction about the Celtics pursuing some sort of bench help, some type of shooter. I think would be helpful. But if that doesn't come to pass either, I still could have the perspective that we've had a lot of minor injuries in the first half, and we've still been able to, pull off a 33-15 record, I believe is what it is. And I'd like to think that we're going to get progressively better. So that could be the logic too. And I'd be, I'm ready to go into the playoffs with this group.
Yeah. I mean, I'm with you. There's no point in rehashing all of it because it is what it is. Like I will say that when things are quietest around the Celtics, that's when I get my most anxiety.
Good point.
Yeah. Like we haven't heard a damn thing about what Danny Ainge is doing. And it feels like this report about Hayward is just kind of somebody feeding information or somebody like getting information that's like trying to light a fire under somebody. Like, I don't think it's legit that the Celtics are looking into Drummond that strongly, but I don't know, man. It's been super, super quiet. And that's the thing that gets me the most. So we'll see. It's this week. Trade deadline is this week. So we'll see if any rumors come up. We'll be on top of it here on the Locked On Celtics podcast. So subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Just hit that subscribe button, however you're listening to it now. And if you're a regular listener, go ahead and give us that 5-star rating and a good written review and share the podcast. Tell everybody to listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.